Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Right now on Fast Cutching, Walmart and Home Depot triggering a stock revival across the retail sector. The XRT surging higher by 4% today and more than 22% in just the past month. Do today's numbers mean the worst case scenario for the economy and consumers off the table? Plus, an industrial revolution, names like Caterpillar, Deere, and the ETF that tracks these stocks grinding higher this summer. The Chartmaster is here to tell us if now is the time to harvest gains in the space. And later, wheeling and dealing in the auto space, shining a light on solar stocks and the wild options action in Bed Bath & Beyond. I'm Melissa Lee. This is Fast Money, live from the Nasdaq market site. On the desk tonight, Tim Seymour, Courtney Garcia, Dan Nathan, and Bono and Eisen. And we start off with a big comeback for Walmart. Shares of the retail giant jumped nearly 5.5% today, its biggest gain since September 2020. The move coming after the stock posted better than expected earnings and maintained guidance for the back half of the year. The stock has now climbed almost 19% above its May lows, and maybe more interesting, it's just 5% away from recouping all its losses since that hugely disappointing earnings report 3 months ago. So did today's report prove that the worst is behind us? And what is Walmart really worth? Has it gotten to a point now, Tim, given where the economy is, given where the consumer is, where it might be expensive?
Well, I think this is the environment where you're supposed to own Walmart. I think this is the environment, despite the inventory issues and the challenges that they've had, that they've announced and that we're going to hear about in some more detail with our next guest and analyze, are things that are not unique to Walmart, and they're the most sophisticated retailer in the world. So what do you pay for Walmart? 19 times, 18 times, certainly above market premium. And I think you do. And one of the things that they pointed out, which is pretty obvious to everybody at home, is that food prices year over year were up 13%. This is the highest number since, 1979. Dan was eating cornflakes back then. Your box of cornflakes are probably,
smaller.
That's right. They've actually shrunk the box and they've charged you more. But I just think, the operating margin is something that we're going to continue to look at. We're going to certainly discount the fact that a lot of this excitement is coming from grocery sales. But that's really what you're expecting. What I thought Doug McMillon said that was extremely interesting is the trade down to Walmart, so to speak, which, seeing it from, upper middle class and people that are actually looking for bargains that clearly don't like the same environment that some of the lower to middle class folks are.
Those with household incomes of more than $100,000.
Yes.
Are shopping at Walmart now. People in general, they're not buying deli meats. They're trading down to cans of tuna, chicken, and beans. This does not sound like a very healthy consumer at this point.
So three quarters of that.
Hold on. Healthy as in healthful?
Both.
Or,
both.
Cans of beans and tuna, it might be
better than deli meat.
Might be better than deli meat.
Tough on guys' constitution. Here's the one thing I'd say. So what they did say, three quarters of their market share gains in food was from incomes of over $100,000. Mm-hmm. So that trade-off, I think, to your point, it doesn't really speak to a consumer that's doing great. We've talked about consumer credit, where it's gone. We've talked about consumer savings, where they've gone. So in a period where you're likely to see food prices stay high, I mean, if you think about what's going on with the situation in Europe and the hoarding of lots of foodstuffs around, some of these agricultural commodities, I mean, we're going to do okay. Places like China are going to do okay. It's kind of like, Africa and that sort of thing. That's likely to keep food prices high. So when I think about what this means for Walmart, Tim just said this is the sort of environment you want to own a stock like. Well, people thought that back in April, right? That stock was making a new all-time high. We had just had a rate increase. The Fed was very serious about battling inflation. I think the food thing is going to be a harder one for them to do. All that being said, you said 19 times okay for a Walmart. It's trading about 23 times this year, 21 times next. And I just don't see it as a great value right here. I think the equilibrium might have been shifted a little bit. But when you think about what they guided for 2023 fiscal year adjusted earnings, they had guided to, I think, a decline of about 12%. Now they're guiding to a decline of about 10%. I think that's probably going to be a moving target, because I think some of this inflationary stuff as it relates to food is going to be hard to really get your fingers around.
Yeah, I don't know if this is necessarily as bad of an idea for the consumer, where we're saying, okay, clearly they're trading down to Walmart. But I think what you're seeing is clearly inflation is affecting the consumer. But what they're doing is they're trading down on things like groceries in order to make sure that they can continue to do things like travel, right? Because you're seeing this huge shift in goods and services, and I think that's what we're seeing. So inflation is affecting the consumer. I don't think this is necessarily detrimental for the consumer overall, but I think it is something to watch here.
Right.
When I think it comes to Walmart, I do think it's important to see that some of these issues are going to be shorter term with them. So we did see their supply chain constraints are coming down, which is a really good thing. They are starting to go more into e-commerce. And I think what's happening, there's a change in the way that the consumer is spending. And if they aren't following that, they're not going to be the same Walmart they were in a year or 2 years from now. But they are, in fact, doing that, which I think is good for the longer term standpoint.
Isn't it good that Walmart, though, you know, if they are attracting a different consumer, a more affluent consumer in this environment, why can't that be sticky? I love going to Walmart. I mean, to me, it's a place where I can find almost anything. And I do feel like I'm actually getting a
bargain. Well, it leads you to cost. And that is that demographic. And when you think about this news about the Paramount Plus, and I'm putting that into Walmart Prime, if they are able to capture a bunch of these consumers they never had access to because they're interested in that, and then you're layering on other services, that is the Amazon.
Their e-commerce, and that was the multiple I was talking about in the show 3 years ago that I thought Walmart was going to start to derive, that they were going to get a little bit more of that e-commerce multiple on Amazon, which we've learned is actually really, is really AWS, by the way.
So is now the time to accord Walmart a higher multiple, taking into consideration the membership program at Walmart, where you pay a flat fee, you get free shipping, you get Walmart Prime or whatever the streaming, or Paramount Plus, whatever they're going to maybe rebrand that streaming partnership as Bono in? Or do you think about Walmart still as dealing with things like higher inflation that it's grappling with, higher fuel costs? If you are of the belief that fuel costs are going to go higher because of either hurricane season or European bans come December, Doug McMillon said maybe wage inflation is here for good. Maybe this is not a stock you want to give a premium to. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really in the camp that believes that we should be looking for a multiple expansion based on what we saw from this quarter, particularly. Now, I am willing to kind of give them a lot of credit for being able to pivot quite quickly, appeal to a new consumer base, which they've all spoken to previously. But again, if you're looking at where they're actually spending those dollars, where that growth has come from, it's really come from those lower margin grocery staple type of items. What I would like to see, and what would make me look for a premium multiple or an expansion of what is currently a premium multiple, is if they're actually able to capture clothing and other higher margin items that tailor to that higher end consumer. That's where that stickiness is going to come. That's where that bundling and where that expansion is going to come from. But right now, in terms of, and they've been very clear, and again, I'm going to give them credit, they've been able to pivot and follow consumer trends, but the consumer is trading down. I don't see how I make an argument for expanding multiples based on the consumer, one, trading down, two, trading down to the very thing that is amongst the lowest margin for that company. So I tend to agree with you there, Mel.
Let's play the game of I tell you the scenario.
You know, I guess feel like we don't play market. A lot of games.
I know, it's very long-winded. It doesn't have a good, catchy name. But let's say yesterday I said to you, Tim, that Walmart was going to have strong earnings. The inventory problem is going to be a thing of the past, and the stock was going to be up 5%. And I asked you, what will the markets do? What would you say?
So this sounds like, let's call this game earnings head fake. I think the dynamic here, first of all, if you look at the market of Walmart to Target over the last year, Walmart's actually outperformed Target by 20% versus Target outperforming Walmart aggressively. I mean, the dynamic of what they reported today and the dynamic of what Target could report tomorrow, I think they're companies that are looked at differently. So, I mean, is the question ultimately...
The question is, do you think the market should have been higher based on Walmart's report? The markets were dragged sharply lower based on Walmart's warnings.
Walmart was up 15% into this print. Walmart's not a high beta name, and I think we did a nice options piece on this yesterday where you look at the implied vol on a couple of these folks, and that actually Target's got a higher implied vol. And in fact, I think good numbers tomorrow out of Target, Target's got more room to run. So I'm not surprised, you know, 5% move in Walmart's a very big move for this retailer.
All right, so to answer her question, it was about the market. It wasn't about the single names, Tim.
It's
You're
the
not
notion that last
game.
Week the markets were cheering.
I made up the name.
No, but I
know.
But I did.
You just wanted to say what you wanted to say, which is fine. That happens on this program. I get that. No, but last week we were cheering a relatively tame CPI number. Today we get more sort of current data from Walmart about the consumer, and it was pretty decent. And the reaction was just sort of, nice.
I think it tells you where sentiment is right now. It's we are glass half full, whereas we are glass half empty. It was shoot first, ask questions later. And we had massive gaps from Walmart and Target over the last few months or so. So the fact that they can come just a month later, kind of tweak down that loss for the balance of the year, I got to tell you, I just said it, I think that's going to be a moving target. But I think it's how investors are interpreting this. Look at Costco. It's only down 3% of the year. Even Amazon, which was at one point cut in half from its highs a year ago, is only down about 12.5%. So it seems like investors want to move into some of these more consumer-centric names that they think bore the brunt of some of the sell-off earlier in the year, and now they think they're going to lead us out. I'm not sure we're out of the woods just yet, though.
I mean, the reality is that this has beat the guide down, right, for Walmart in the stock rallies, Courtney. So how do you feel about the markets? Do you feel any better about it? I mean, does what Walmart reported change how you view the markets at this point?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think there's good and there's bad of what we saw from Walmart. I think seeing the fact that there is like a higher income consumers being affected by inflation is not necessarily what you want to see from the overall market standpoint. But on the flip side, we do need to see some of the softening in order for the Fed to maybe continue lessening their rate hikes as we go forward. So I don't think Walmart specifically really changes the picture, but I do think we are getting really positive signs that inflation's coming down. We also saw that with them also as some of their supply chain issues are coming down here, which ultimately is going to be a good thing for the long run.
Yeah. Bonawin?
Yeah, inflation is coming down, but consumers are clearly more stretched, which is why people making over $100,000 are spending money on canned beans and tuna at Walmart. No, not at all. I do not think that is positive at all. Now, it plays into the narrative, which is people saying inflation is more tame, which means the Fed is going to likely pivot. But you already know, I think that story is very long in the tooth. And I think if you just objectively look at the data that was put out by Walmart, no, I do not think it's a positive, generally speaking, for the market. And I did not expect it to be up much higher. No, not at all.
Let's get more on retail and the state of the consumer. Jerry Storch, former CEO of Hudson's Bay and Toys R Us. He now runs Storch Advisors. Jerry, always great to get your take. Do you think the likes of a Walmart and Target, do you think the worst is behind them? We through the woods?
Well, I think this is a story old as time, since Target and Walmart were both founded 60 years ago in 1962. During tough economic times, consumers go to Walmart. Why? They trade down. They want value, value, value. In great times, Target does better. There's nothing new about this story. And, you know, in fact, if Walmart saw the results they delivered today, a year ago, they would have been apoplectic to see such a decline in their operating income and their inventories bloated. So, look, the good news is it didn't get worse. 3 weeks ago, they warned as if things were falling apart and even getting worse and worse and worse. Now they backtracked and they're back to where they were before they warned. So at least things aren't getting worse. But this is a typical pattern in a time when consumers are stressed and an inflationary economy. It's been true for 60 years, and it's true now.
You were the former vice chair of Target. So what do you think this bodes for Target's earnings tomorrow? Does this mean that Target may be in trouble, perhaps, because Target doesn't have the groceries?
Well, I guess they're ahead. They only had to, warn once, you know, after earnings, which they did back in early June. So I think they took a big enough hit when they took that hit, and they're smart enough not to want to take another one, that they've lowered expectations and they have a chance of beating them. The consumer does still have money. We're not in a depression after all. Target is still one of the places where they like to go during tough economic times. It's just they prefer Walmart because it's cheaper and everyone knows it's cheaper. So, you know, Target has a lot more discretionary items and the consumer is headed towards food, where Target is not as strong, and, you know, away from apparel and electronics, where Target tends to be very strong. So it's a worse environment for Target by just a little bit, but I wouldn't think that means they're going to do terribly tomorrow. I think if they had bad news coming, we would have known about it by now. So I expect them to slightly beat very steeply lowered expectations. Just keep in mind how badly both of these companies are doing this quarter compared to their historical norms.
And those expectations are down 30% from Q1. Jerry, I'm going to ask you a question, though, about the warning on inventory and the impact that both these stocks saw. Was that fair? Again, we're talking about an inventory dynamic that's very challenging. Or were the markets actually imputing the consumer and the dynamics you're talking about upon their stock prices?
look, these are great companies. These are really smart people, but they got rope-a-dope by the supply chain issues last year into buying too much of the wrong inventory. They will not make that mistake again. They have a lot to work through. Target has a lot to work through. They took a huge markdown. Walmart still, Doug said today, he's still got over $1 billion of inventory he really doesn't want to have. He's still up 25% year over year. So he's still got a problem on his hands that he's got to digest. But they're not going to make that problem going forward. They're not stupid. They've seen the change in the consumer, the shift towards consumables, the shift towards food, and that's where they're going to focus their inventory. They'll make smart bets. You know, he mentioned on inflatable Halloween items, which are huge sellers these days. Halloween is burgeoning as a holiday. But they'll bet on that, but they won't bet on everything across the board in hard lines anymore. You know, they're going to mind their expense rate, which they're the best at in the world, and they're going to do a good job as we get to the fourth quarter. I'm not worried at all about any of these companies, Target, Walmart, Costco, et cetera. They're going to do great. It's the guys who are already in trouble, who never really figured out their strategies. You know, Bed Bath & Beyond or a Kohl's or a Gap, who are in big trouble. You know, they're trying to sell ice cream to Eskimos right now and trying to sell apparel, you know, out there when no one wants to buy it. So I think some of these other companies are in big trouble, and some of the smaller mom and pops are in big trouble as we get to the fourth quarter.
Like ice cream in winter as well, Jerry. I mean, I think it's an all-weather kind of food. But in terms of, you know, the notion that Walmart is appealing much more to those with household incomes above $100,000, how do you extrapolate that? How do you think about the retail sector in terms of who might be feeling that pain with the trade down?
Sure. You know, again, if I hadn't heard this story over 60 years so many times, I might think it was a new story. But every time the economy gets tough, they say, oh, look, higher income people are shopping with us now. Look, nobody likes to get taken. So, you know, when prices go up, even people with a lot of money, they go, look, Walmart's a lot cheaper. And they are. Do the price checks yourself. Walmart is a heck of a lot cheaper than going to the neighborhood grocery store, for God's sakes, which is where the biggest gap is. They manage the price margin so that it's like 15 to 30% less expensive to go to Walmart than it is to your neighborhood grocery store. So people aren't foolish. So they see that difference. And even people with money go, I don't like getting ripped off. And especially during a double-digit inflationary period like this, then they look at the deals at Walmart and they go and shop there. But as soon as times get good again, they go, you know, I really don't like Walmart that much. It's kind of dirty. You know, there's dust there. It's this and it's that. They're out of stock. I don't know what. But then they go back to right to where they used to shop. So I don't expect that to be a permanent change. I think that, like I said, I've seen this story so many times that I don't think this is some, you know, fantastic change in the world or in the consumer. It's what always happens when times get tough. And keep in mind, most of Walmart's growth, in fact, almost all of it, was simply inflation. You know, you had double-digit growth in grocery prices, and that was where they had double-digit growth. I'd say, based on the calculations, they didn't exactly say it, but something like 80 to 90% of their comp sales growth was just inflation. And now they're forecasting a 3% same-store sales growth for the third quarter. I don't think that's even going to be keeping up with inflation. You want to bet it's not going to be more than 3% inflation year over year next quarter?
Jerry, it's always great to get your take and the context of the situation. Jerry Storch
of
Storch Advisors. Do they hold on to those higher income concerns? Maybe, dare I say it, maybe it's different this time with a streaming service. I don't know if Walmarts are dirty because I don't go to Walmart. I order online. I've never stepped foot in a, well, not never, hardly ever. But I order online constantly, Dan. And maybe that's the difference this time.
Yeah, I think you want to listen to a guy like Jerry, given his experience in that. And, you know, Target has obviously gone for a different experience there. And you just mentioned, you know, they don't lean into the groceries, that thing. It's a lot more apparel. And if you listen to what they said, Target said this and Walmart said this, those higher margin, more discretionary items they're having a hard time with, they've been having a hard time with for months. So those are the sorts of items that would keep that sort of shopper if they know they're there and there's a better grocery experience. So Walmart is not that. And they will not change that. The best case that they have is really doing a Walmart Prime that looks like a lot of DTC, that bundles in a lot of other services. That's their best bet. I have been to plenty of Walmarts. I like shopping at Walmarts. But what I'm saying is it's not a Target experience, and it's not a higher-end experience that you would expect as it comes to apparel.
Yeah. When I heard about consumers trading down and higher-income household being the new Walmart customer, Tim, I thought of Starbucks. Mm-hmm. And do those customers start trading down? You were just railing against the price increases at Starbucks.
I think Starbucks is at a place where you're going to see those folks trading down. And I think Starbucks has a quality issue. Starbucks has a bunch of different issues, including their pricing issues. And back to Walmart, I think the company does deserve a better multiple. Mm-hmm. Jerry made it black and white, very clear. Bad times you go to Walmart, good times you go to Target. But Walmart has not pivoted overnight. Walmart's always had their strength in groceries. They've always had their strength. They are the price leader. They push people around. They will continue to do this. But they've been planning for years. And the argument that those Walmart stores are basically the same logistics and ERP that Amazon spent a lot of money building, Walmart already has a lot of that. So their pivot into the Walmart Prime and that kind of a business to me is something I think they deserve a better multiple for. By the way, Walmart's may be dirtier, but I'm dirtier when I go to Walmart. I mean, I actually feel like I don't need to get dressed up. I feel like I can kind of
comfortable.
I tell you, it's comfortable. It's a better place to be.
Coming up, I like saving money, so I'll go wherever. Modernize or move. We're raising the roof on the housing trade as investors digest fresh data. What the numbers, as well as Home Depot's earnings, say about the housing market. Plus, deer caught in the headlights. A Chartmaster flagging some troubling technicals. He'll break down the levels in just a few. Fast Money's back right after this.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. It's a house divided in the housing market today, with shares of Home Depot up more than 4% after reporting better than expected earnings. Meanwhile, housing starts tumbled nearly 10% in July to their lowest level since February 2021. So what's the state of the housing trade? Bonwin, what's your take?
Well, I think what's bad for the left hand is good for the right. I think the trouble that we're having in terms of new build is actually a boon to existing and for do-it-yourself or professional contractor type of work. If you're unable to kind of trade up, I think you're more likely, particularly with flexible work continuing the way it is, I'll get to that in a second, I think that you're more likely to be able to spend that money fixing up a home rather than taking on new debt to try to trade up to another market or to, you know, a more desirable home or location. With that said, I do think, you know, Apple announced like they're going to be moving people back to work. I think that might be what I look for in terms of possible downside to your, you know, Home Depots of the world, your Lowe's of the world. That might be the headwind that really kind of starts to shift consumer sentiment towards these names. But as it stands right now, I think, you know, the housing market is challenged. I said before, I think this is really the linchpin of the economy in which you need to continue to drive forward. But again, I don't think what's good for one is necessarily good for the other. And I think you're kind of seeing those differences, those divergences in terms of the things that contribute to uptrends, you know, play out in the Home Depot price action today.
The reaction to in Home Depot to the earnings is very interesting early this morning, because initially the stock was lower and, you know, they had fewer transactions
and yet higher
and higher prices. Ticket prices. Yep. Inflation played a role in that, as Jerry Storch had highlighted. Without inflation, who knows where those the total, you know, ticket price would be on checkout, Courtney. So how do you look at this? Was this just sort of swept up in the retail revival, as we talked about at the top, or is this actually a good story?
Well, I think what you have to look at, right, is this is backwards looking, and clearly inflation has been a problem, right? We're looking at peak inflation, and yes, people are having to spend less at Home Depot because things are costing more. But if commodity prices are coming down, that's ultimately going to help demand towards Home Depot. And I do think a soft housing market, which is likely going to continue at least for the near term, is actually positive for Home Depot, because these are going to help people who are already locked into these lower interest rates, aren't going to be looking to jump into new houses, which are now priced so much higher. So yes, they're going to be spending more at Home Depot. Plus, you have all the pro sales there. So I think this is actually longer term, a good story for Home Depot.
Return to office, that's an interesting dynamic. You're not at home looking at the caulk that needs to be redone, Tim. You're going to the office instead.
Look, if you're not careful, you got to redo caulk every, you know, 18 months,
it's,
folks. I mean,
dirty.
Be careful.
It's
the
impossible.
Bathrooms can get bad. I mean, no, the DIY, by the way, again, the do-it-yourself and all that for the home body was part of the part of this that actually didn't sell well. So and the pro sales are what kept him in the game. But the guy at home's not doing a lot at Home Depot.
Yeah, I think your point, though, this stock was trading down after those results came out, and it really got going as it looked like Walmart was going to take off. I think that Lowe's is going to be really interesting tomorrow when you think about like valuations and where stocks deserve to trade. I mean, Home Depot is trading at a discount to where it traded easily with a 20 plus multiple PE multiple for years into this decline here. And now you're expecting, you know, single digits, maybe mid-ish earnings and sales growth for Home Depot trading around 19 times. Well, Lowe's trades about 15 and a half times or so. Expected earnings growth better than Home Depot. So let's see what Lowe's puts up. I mean, that one looks more interesting to me on a valuation basis.
All right. There's a lot more fast money to come. Here's what's up next.
Bad news for Bambi. Deer rallying hard from its lows, but the Chartmaster says this stock could be about to get bucked. He'll break down the levels next. Plus, solar stocks needing some sunscreen. The group getting burned in today's session. So should you break out the aloe or keep soaking up the sun? You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Industrial size gains for some industrial names recently. Deer and Cat up double digits over the past month. But can this run continue? Let's go off the charts with the chart master, Carter Braxton-Worth of Worth Charting. Carter, what are you looking at?
Well, let's look at the sector first, XLI, the spider for the entire sector, S&P 500, and then look at Deer. So what do we know? We know where it bounced. It bounced to the penny off of that trend line, or what you would call a level of support, which is the pre-COVID high. The second iteration really tells the story, though. Look at this. Where have we bounced to? We've bounced right to the downtrend line that's been in effect since the high on the second chart. And so the question is, does this start to falter here? That's my thinking. It's the definition of a rally to a difficult level. But Deere itself has been even sort of more dynamic and therefore more of a rally to a difficult level. Now, you can talk about a megaphone. It doesn't matter whether you call your pattern a head and shoulder, a cup and handle. That's all for selling books. What it is, though, is a rally to a difficult level. That is where overhead supply comes into play. And if we zero in on the here and now chart, and you'll see it next, we've returned quite precisely to the June high. So just finally, look at the percentages. You plunge 23-24% from the June high, not from the all-time high, of course, and then return to it. This is where sellers emerge from above, and people who bought well just 2-3 weeks ago emerge from below, looking to, in principle, book profits. And so I'm a seller here. Write calls against your long at a minimum, but do something. Don't just ride the ride. Usually when you're feeling comfortable that it's all free blue skies, it's something happens.
Carter, these are specifically sort of the construction, the equipment names that you're focusing in on. But in terms of industrials more broadly, do you see similar charts for others, a Honeywell, a GE, you name it?
Well, things like Eaton and Emerson have bounced a lot, but then there are industrials like GE that are very depressed and in principle have upside. But I think that XLI chart really tells the tale. Where industrials found their footing and how much they've bounced now, they too, as an aggregate, as a theme, I think are good trim candidates.
All right, Carter, good to see you. Thank you. Carter Braxton-Worth of Worth Charting. Tim, you agree?
Well, he says go do something. And ultimately, I think the rotation we've seen in markets into industrials and transports. I mean, look at the IYT, look at the XLI through the 200. And it's the race to get back above the 200 and downtrend lines are broken. So Carter said, you know, what do you do with that? I look at Deere and I look at the valuation and it's easy to actually get reasonably excited based upon what you think. If all this other dynamic that we're talking about in terms of the economic headwinds, though, are true. And also on some level, you've seen a little bit of a front loading of of you know, some of the construction, but some of the ag products. And I think that's something that is something to be considered. Ultimately, I don't really want to own this sector. I actually think markets are going higher overall. And I think, therefore, you could continue to see some move here. But this value trade, I think, will be replaced more by defensive value. And I think that really means high tech.
I mean, if ag prices go down, financing costs continue to tick higher, that's not necessarily a recipe for success for either of these stocks.
So you're talking about a stagflationary environment. You're talking about a global growth that just doesn't really feel like it's all going to come together at the same time. If you think about some of the data that we saw over China in the weekend, it seems like Europe is going to be a malaise for a very long time. And again, you know, I just don't think this is that constructive. I think Tim kind of nailed it. It was a rotation into a value sort of trade where the sentiment was really bad. But I just don't see us coming out in a rip-roaring fashion, at least the U.S., because I do believe that we're probably not far behind what is likely a recession in Europe. And China has always been one of the locales that drives a lot of interest in a lot of these sorts of names, whether, you know, industrials. In this sector, in the XLI, the largest holding is Union Pacific. So, I mean, when you think about this, it's kind of all mashed up with transports, too. I don't love them here.
Yeah, I do think, though, if we're looking at some of the names that were mentioned, right, like a Deere versus a Cat, I actually would look at a Deere versus a Cat, because although we're looking at your industrials in total, I think your agriculture space, there is still this big supply issue where there's a lot of, whether it's used or new equipment, there's a huge undersupply right now. And a lot of these farmers are actually incentivized to get new, more efficient technology equipment. And that's where I think Deere really stands as a longer-term standpoint, whereas construction, which is Cat, you're actually seeing a lot less construction spending. So I think industrials in total is one thing, but if we have to look at them, I'd actually look at a Deere over a Cat.
Self, would you rather?
There it is.
She's not afraid.
Old
Coming
games
up,
and new tonight.
Is the sun setting on the solar trade? The group getting burned in today's session, so is it time to find some shade? The details next. Plus, pedal to the metal, Auto Nation speeding to new all-time highs. So what had shares hitting all green lights? We'll break it down when Fast Money returns.
Get your trades to go with the Fast Money Podcast. Catch us anytime, anywhere. Follow today on your favorite podcasting app. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Cloudy skies for solar stocks today. The TAN solar ETF losing almost 1.5% after a big run this month. The move lower comes as President Biden signs the Inflation Reduction Act into law, a package that includes billions in clean energy credits. So can solar stocks rebound from here? Bonawan, you follow this space. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the Inflation Reduction Act was a big tailwind for the space. And what you saw was a lot of these names moving 70, 80, 90% over the last 2-3 months. And I think, you know, it makes sense from a top-down view as you kind of want that secular exposure. But I think we're at the point now, and today may be an early indication, that you want to start taking a bit of a bottoms-up approach. A lot of these names trade in triple-digit forward price to earnings, have quite a bit of debt on their balance sheet, which is why First Solar is one of those names that I really like. It's got manageable debt load and, you know, trades at, again, it's expensive vis-a-vis the rest of the market, but vis-a-vis peers, it's actually a decent valuation. I think, again, I pitched it earlier, I think it's one of these names where you might want to look at stock replacement via calls. Vols are low. It's an opportunity for you to continue to possibly ride the wave, but take some chips off the table and still keep your upside exposure.
Court.
Yeah, I think some of my concern with your solar stocks here, and this has been something I talk about with clients, not just last couple of months, last couple of years, is this is where the future is heading. But I think a lot of that has been priced into these stocks. They trade so much more expensive than, like, for example, some of your clean energy sources. So, yes, I do think the future is headed this way. But I actually think probably a better way of playing this is looking at things like copper, right? Some of your clean energy metals, for example. I think some of those might have a little more room here, which aren't at such crazy valuations. I think ultimately that's a little my problem with it in the short term.
I think that's what people sort of miss in this whole thing, and that is that the metals needed to actually create and manufacture solar panels, solar installations, those have gone up in price too. So we're
massively
at a point now where you can have projects, but it's much, much more costly to do and complete, and a lot of them have been scrapped, in fact.
Yeah, copper prices, as we know, were kind of up in the 470s. All-time highs have pulled back dramatically, but still, you know, above where they've been over the last 10 to 15 years. This is also coming on a day when we've already talked about this news, but, you know, Germany more formally has gone ahead and said, look, we are actually going to keep our last three remaining nuclear power plants open at a time when we have a major gas problem, and we know that they're safe. So, you know, I know this is a lot of debate out there, and this isn't the forum to do it, but I think nuclear is safe, and I think it's, you know, to me, it's almost surprising to me that you don't see more of a rally today on that kind of a news? Because this is an endorsement for nuclear, too.
Yeah. Coming up, going above and beyond, shares of Bed Bath & Beyond rocketing higher as retail traders flood in. How an executive at GameStop is helping fuel this rally. But first, check out AutoNation revving up to all-time highs. Is this stock ready for a long road trip? We're breaking it down when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares of AutoNation topping the tape and surging to an all-time high today. So what's driving this stock higher? Let's bring in auto analyst Michael Ward with The Benchmark Company. Michael, great to have you with us. I want to first deal with today's surge. Was there anything behind this?
Well, I think there are two things. I did hear that one of the big brokerage firms had a positive report out there. But also the news from Walmart and Home Depot is certainly good news on the consumer side.
At the same time, Michael, what's interesting to me in the notes is that you say that the consumer, I mean, it sounds like you think investors have got the story wrong, that if there's trouble for the consumer, it means trouble for AutoNation, and that that's not necessarily true.
Well, I think the market's got two things wrong. I think they have it wrong on the entire auto sector. Huh. You know, basically the position that it's in relative to other downturns. The auto industry should outperform the rest of the global economy over the next 12 to 18 months. I mean, third quarter alone, production will be up 30%. And specific to the dealers and specific to AutoNation, I think they have it completely wrong, because historically, less than 10% of expected deliveries over the next 6 months would be backed by a consumer order. Now it's over 70%. And so really, over the next 6 to 12 months, to me, it's almost indifferent what the consumer does.
So over the next six to 12 months or so, you think that sales are pretty much secure just because inventory is so low. The demand Absolutely. Is so high. There's not enough.
There are enough orders out there, and mm-hmm. so every vehicle that's being delivered to a dealer is being delivered to a consumer. And so as a result, unless you saw a big wave of increase in cancellations or those sorts of things, yes, sales will still be strong. But we haven't seen any evidence yet of cancellations. If anything, the order book is getting stronger.
When will we see sort of those cancellations? I'm just trying to figure out how sensitive an auto dealer or maybe an automaker is to a softening consumer. Maybe things are good right now and inventories are tight, et cetera. But at some point down the line, when unemployment ticks higher, people start losing their jobs or dealing with a lot of other costs, they may not want that car. There may be no reason for them to have that car anymore.
Yeah, in certain regions that could be a case. But right now, I've been following the auto sector for 40 years, and this is the most bullish I've seen the underlying demographic trends for vehicle demand in that entire 40-year period. The vehicle fleet right now is the oldest it's ever been. It's over 12 years of age. And over the last 5 years, you've had the biggest increase in licensed drivers since the 70s. So vehicle demand is going to become even stronger over the next 5 years than it's been the last 5 years. And one other, you know, driving point on that is the millennials. People aren't paying attention to demographics. The prime age for home and vehicle ownership is the 40 to 45 age group. And millennials, which is a bigger wave of the baby boomers, the oldest ones turned 40 in 2021. So we have a big wave ahead of us.
Talk to us about the used car dynamic here. I read that 90% of their used car inventory was self-sourced, and that gives them some sort of big advantage, either by lease, trade-ins, you know, we buy your car, that sort of thing. Are we still in an environment where that used car inventory is still really important?
It's vital. And, you know, most people trade their car in when they're getting a new one. And you know, that's about 80% of demand is, you know, people are trading in their vehicles. And so what AutoNation is able to do is they can self-source those used vehicles, so they're not forced to go out and pay the premium prices. It's part of the overall transaction. And so they can determine which vehicles they want to keep or which vehicles they want to sell back to the auction markets. And so that is a very important dynamic to follow. Companies like Carvana have to go out and self-source that inventory, where the customers are coming into the AutoNation showroom as part of the trade-in and as part of the total overall equation.
Michael, great to get your take. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Michael Ward of The Benchmark Company. He's got a 185 price target on AutoNation. That's about $50 of upside from here. Tim, what do you think of this one?
I like it. My exposure in the auto space is, first of all, agreeing with all the trends he's talking about in terms of supply, demand, dynamics, and where we are with some of the overall demographics and where we are with vehicle life, et cetera, puts me straight into the OEMs. I mean, I'd rather own Ford or GM. Mm-hmm. And to me, I think I look at the business in Ford and I look at the gross margin improvement of this business, and they're obsessed by cost control. And that's something that in the auto sector is something I don't think we've given them credit for. So agree that I think that the auto sector, demand trends are more insulated in this environment because of demand, even though affordability factors. I think, look, pricing in auto for Ford, we heard this last quarter, they're raising prices dramatically, and so far it's working.
The demographic aspect is really interesting in terms of the uptick in licensed drivers, in terms of the millennials being a bigger wave coming than baby boomers. I mean, that's tremendous.
Yeah, the millennials are actually a larger generation already than baby boomers. And I think that that same idea goes into housing, right? Where right now what we're seeing with cars is there's this pent-up demand that now people are still trying to get all their cars. And that's why we're trading down for things like Walmart so that we can get our cars, which we've been pushing off. And I think that's probably going to happen with housing, right? As housing is slowing down. But we're just pushing that issue down the line. There's a huge generation that's coming. They're all starting families. They need cars. They need houses. And I think that's going to be a trend over the longer term that's only pushing it down the line.
Bonoin?
Yeah, there's no arguing against the demographic shift and also the supply-demand dynamics. If I had one bone to pick, and I'm super splitting hairs here, it would be the consumer finance acquisition that they recently made. I would assume that going into where we are in terms of, you know, the economy and where we are with the consumer, you might see some charge-offs related to that, and you might see some margin of safety kind of erosion there. But other than that, I think it makes a very compelling argument.
Coming up, shares of Bed Bath & Beyond surging higher as the retail traders flood in. We'll break down what had this stock moving next. Fast Money's back in two. Welcome back. Here's a sneak peek at the Cramer Cam. Jim is talking with the CEO of Sunnova. Catch the full exclusive interview, top of the hour on Mad Money. Meantime, check out shares of Bed Bath & Beyond rallying as much as 70% at its peak today, helping fuel the move higher is news that GameStop chairman Ryan Cohen is getting in on the action. A regulatory filing shows Cohen's RC Ventures bought call options on 1.6 million shares of Bed Bath & Beyond, betting the stock is headed about 300% higher by January. Mike Coe is breaking this trade down. Mike, what do you make of this?
This is pretty incredible. Okay, so first of all, Bed Bath & Beyond traded about 2 million contracts today. That would represent 200 million shares. That's 7.8 times the average daily volume. And by the way, the float is only about 65 million shares. So the options volume represents about three times the float. Now, we saw a lot of activity in strikes as high as the 45s. Those were actually that expired at the end of this week. Those were the most active contracts. But the ones that really caught my eye and the ones that he indicated he was purchasing go out to January of 2023. He was buying strikes from 60 up to 80. The 80s traded over 100,000 contracts today. Those were trading for several dollars a share, over $3. So buyers of those are risking a material portion of the current stock price on bets that the squeeze that we're looking at here could continue, maybe much, much higher.
What was interesting is that shortly after this, GameStop shares started to surge as well. I mean, this is all part of this meme complex going on and the risk trade back on. Tim, what do you think? What do you make of all this?
Well, I look at the short interest in Bed Bath & Beyond and, you know, 36-37%, at least the readings I'm getting, they could be a little stale. But and if anything, maybe there's been, you know, that number's lower because there's been a short squeeze. But this is a stock that's had those numbers up close to 60%. And so, again, the existential dynamics to me at Bed Bath & Beyond are different than a GameStop or even an AMC. I think they have a business. They have balance sheet issues. And so, again, that was also an issue at AMC. I'm not surprised to see this, and this is a broader market dynamic with what's going on with meme stocks and risk.
Karen actually emailed me a chart of Bed Bath & Beyond's debt, which is trading horribly compared to what the right. stock is doing, and said they should raise money immediately and take advantage of this stock.
As those other two companies did.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but here's the thing, okay? Is it the tail wagging the dog? Just because he goes out there and buys a bunch of calls that are way out of the money there, there's no fundamental reason why this stock should ever trade there. He is squeezing the shorts deliberately. Yeah.
Right.
And let me tell you, if he did that and then the stock rallies the way they do and then they sell stock, buyer beware there, because there's no fundamental reason why the stock should be here right now. I think that's fair to say. And so, I mean, to me, this feels like a big fugazi, as the kids say.
As a guy says.
Oh, that's what
the guy
adopts.
It's real. I mean,
but yeah, exactly.
Fundamentals are real.
If he doesn't go do this, he knows that buying all those calls so far out of the money is going to squeeze the stock.
Well, what's
and never have to act on.
Think about what he's spending to buy those calls to produce this much more in market cap. That's an interesting dynamic, too. I mean, that's probably a great trade on his part.
Yeah, and I mean, we can sit here all day long and we can talk about what the fundamentals are, but that's what we're going to do is look at the technicals of the company. But that's not what this is trading on. That's not what the meme stocks have done. And I think we've all seen over the last year, you can't necessarily bet against these retail traders. Mm-hmm. They clearly have a lot more power and they're realizing that. So, no, for the fundamentals, it's not something you're looking at, but it's not to say it can't happen.
Mike? Would you be inclined at this point to put on a bearish options trade on Bed Bath, or is that just waters too treacherous to tread in?
Yeah, so a bearish bet, if it meant selling some upside call spreads or something like that, trying to collect some of this highly elevated premium mm-hmm. in the event that the effort to squeeze it doesn't work out, that might make sense. Shorting the stock, absolutely not. Selling naked calls, absolutely not. And buying puts, probably not either because they're just too pricey.
All right, Mike, thanks for that. Mike Coe. For more options action, be sure to tune into the full show Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Up next, final trades. Final trade time, buy and win.
Spy call stock replacement.
Tim?
That higher income trade down in Walmart shares to me is attractive. I think it's stickier than the market.
Courtney.
Dear, we talked about this earlier. I actually do like their long-term story here. Dan?
Yeah, AutoNation, powerful breakout. Look to reload maybe on the long side at that breakout level.
Such a fun show tonight. Courtney, would you rather? Bonawin didn't bring back any guests. I mean, a successful outing. Thank you for watching Fast. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 5. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.